Is March Madness a Blast movie? Absolutely. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Blast Podcast, a show where we believe movies can be more than just movies. I'm your host, Steve Watts, joined as always by my co-host, Bruce Pearl. And today we have an action-packed episode. Ty and I are always comparing movies to sports and sports to movies. So today we are bringing back an episode concept we did last year, which is what the Sweet 16 teams would be if they were movies. This year, we'll also be completing a bracket with these movies in them, so we're looking forward to seeing how these matchups and comps go. Before we dive in, let's hear a word from our sponsor. As always, the Blast Podcast is presented by the Blast app, which is going to be available sooner than you may realize. Make sure you're following our Instagram page at @blast_movies_, our TikTok at @blast.movies, and our YouTube channel at @blast.movies to stay up to date on all of our latest content. There you'll find podcast clips, movie ticket reviews from Ty and myself, and up-to-date news on the progress of the app. Lastly, please make sure to check out our app's landing page at blastmovies.net, where you can learn more about what Blast is going to be. All right, Ty, what have you watched this week?
Got a couple for you. Been back and forth on a couple flights, spending a lot of money back and forth to catch Marquette, win a couple big games, a couple trips for work, so... First watch, and this spanned across 3 days. I think a couple times while I was showering, I had it like against the wall in the shower, and then also on the plane ride. But I was watching The Batman, and without question, this movie never fails to amaze me. It is a blast movie. This watch, only because it wasn't in a theater, it's going to get an A, not an A+. But I could turn this movie on. It's slowly becoming a rewatchable. I don't know if Bill Simmons would do a rewatchables on The Batman, but the second you get that opening scene or you jump right into, you know, the bomb on the district attorney's like face, that scene, there's just so many rewatchable scenes where you get hooked. And that's why I'm able to come back to this movie, I think, once a month. It just, it's a good watch.
I think that we agree that The Batman is better than The Dark Knight all around, but I'm wondering what you think is more rewatchable between the two.
The Batman is easily more rewatchable for me. I think a better question is what is more rewatchable, or maybe even a better blast movie between The Batman and The Dark Knight Rises, because the last couple watches for The Batman have been making it a case for me. I think objectively it's the best Batman. I don't know if I'm ready to make the case I love it more than Dark Knight Rises because of the impact that movie had on me at such a young age.
Yeah. Fair enough. I think for me, I do prefer the Batman, but the length is, it makes the rewatch a little harder for me. So I'm going Dark Knight, more rewatchable. DKR, even more rewatchable than that.
My only drawback for The Batman is that I think this movie works slightly better if it ends with the Riddler just being captured and there isn't like another 30 minutes of him duking it out with Riddler's goons. I think there's some great moments that come out of it, but it feels like the movie ends 4 different times after that period. And I also don't like the Joker cameo. It felt like cheap sequel studio mandate stuff. It's another big one for me.
Barry Keoghan. Saltburn.
He basically plays the same character. All right, another one for you. Could have been a great opportunity to be a blast movie, but it wasn't. And that was Anyone But You. All I've heard about this movie is that it's a really fun time. It's Sydney Sweeney, Gwen Powell, two attractive people, two funny people. It's just a good watch. I didn't love it. I thought it was really cheesy. The dialogue was even worse. I'm not sold on Sydney Sweeney as an actor beyond Euphoria. Glenn Powell's fine, but I don't know. This just didn't capture the magic that something like How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days did for me. And that's what I was hoping for. And I can't say this was a blast movie. I didn't have fun. Have you seen this yet?
I have not, no. But I am looking forward to seeing Sydney Sweeney in Immaculate.
That looks awesome. Producer Jack, where do you dive in here? Like, do you, for Sydney Sweeney, like, obviously I think I can get you to go see Anyone But You, and I'm sure that you've probably already done your homework on that movie, but for something scary like Immaculate, where do you draw the line? Because Sydney Sweeney's in it, but it's scary.
It's a toss-up, but I would lean no just because I don't touch anything horror. The Sydney Sweeney, that does add a little gravitas, but yeah, no.
Well, I definitely have another watch from this week that is a Jack movie that you would love to watch, because not only is it your perfect archetype, it also has one of your favorite actresses of all time, Rebecca Ferguson. Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, we are introduced to the character Ilsa Faust, played by Rebecca Ferguson, and kaboom, she looks great. She's just killing it in this role. Is honestly, I think, the linchpin of why the MI movie survived. It was the perfect time to introduce a new, different character that wasn't a part of the IMF, comes from MI6. Is she good? Is she not? This introduction to this character makes this movie special, but I always enjoy this movie. I wouldn't say objectively it holds up like a Fallout or even a Dead Reckoning, but it puts a smile on my face to see Ethan Hunt, Tom Cruise hold onto a plane as it takes off. And I think my other favorite element from this movie is that Solomon Lane is the first and maybe only villain to outsmart Ethan almost every step of the way. It felt like Ethan was at odds and like frustrated that he couldn't best Solomon Lane. This kind of goes away in the next two movies, which sucks. I think they should have leaned on this a little bit more, but always fun to revisit this one.
I haven't seen this since theaters, I don't think.
I never saw
But that's true for most MI movies.
Okay, I remember seeing Ghost Protocol in theaters. I did not see Rogue Nation in theaters.
I blacked out for most of your plot description just because Rebecca Ferguson walking out of the pool just is ingrained in my head. Wow. Sorry. Keep going.
Ingrained in your head and also in full fat head. And
it's on the wall.
In your bedroom. Yep. But we'll pivot now away from Rogue Nation. We'll let Jack sit with his Rebecca Ferguson thoughts. Everything Everywhere All at Once was another Airplane movie that I watched. I went to Netflix, downloaded the movie. It popped up on like your feed, and it was kind of a no-brainer for me because I've had so many great theater experiences with this movie. I mean, Steve, we've talked about it. I remember that first theater watch. I went like about an hour and a half in and was thinking, okay, it's a really fun movie. If we're talking Letterboxd, I'd probably give it like a 3.5 out of 5. I'm just having a good time. I'm not understanding the hype. And then the rock scene hits. And then the last 40, 50 minutes of this movie just make you so emotionally vulnerable. And it hits every single time. And it hits here. The only kicker is with this time, and maybe because I was on a plane, not perfect sound, not perfect video quality, I was just itching to get to that last 40 minutes. I wasn't enjoying the ride. I wasn't enjoying the fun, goofy, campy stuff as much as I did in the theater. So it still is a blast movie because of the impact, because of the way it makes me feel in the third act, but the journey to get to the third act wasn't as special as those theater watches.
Interesting. Yeah, I think that first like hour and a half is just essential for, I guess, developing like Joy's depression and showing that relationship between her and her mom. But I can see that after a couple of watches, maybe it does kind of fade from importance and make you want to skip ahead.
It works. I'm not talking about the great character work. I'm more so referencing things like Raccoonie being addressed for the third time or the hot dog finger bit that they do. Like those things, I feel like could have, like they were necessary on those first couple watches, but I'm so eager to get to just the meat of this movie, the stuff that makes you cry, and things like Raccoonie kind of hold you back from that. That was my take. Hmm. Still an A-minus blast experience on a plane. It's a pretty good grade. And then right after Everything Everywhere All at Once, I'm emotionally vulnerable. I'm ready to cry. I'm in the mood to cry. So what better movie to find on the plane? A Star is Born, a movie I haven't seen since it came out in, I want to say 2018. Was it 2017, Steve?
I think 2017. I'm not positive, though. I've never seen this one.
Gut check. I'm going to go 18 and just slam my chips on the table. We'll have producer Jack reference that later. But I don't know. I'm hit or miss on this being a blast movie, because one of the key elements is, did this make me feel something? Yes, it does. It's soul crushing, this movie, but in the process of it, me feeling something, I really didn't learn anything. It just kind of broke my heart in a way that didn't teach me anything. I just felt sad, and it took me back to the first time seeing it. Just an emotional gut punch that I should have never revisited again. Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga, even Sam Elliott, they're all great here. I remember it like just took me back to the experience of seeing it for the first time, but I'm now certain I probably will never revisit this one again.
Should I watch it for a first time? Is it worth it or not?
Yeah, definitely. Unless you're, it's kind of weird. Bradley Cooper has fallen under this weird umbrella of like his effort and attempt to be a method actor is just getting clowned. And I feel like he's the only one outside of Austin Butler that is getting flack for it. Like, he's great in Maestro, and what he did to prepare for that role was awesome. But I think he's being portrayed as just a Looney Tunes character. So I don't know. This is kind of a blast of the past of like prime Bradley Cooper really dialing it in. I would give it a shot.
Before method acting as Rocket for the past 3 years.
Yeah, no kidding. Gosh, I kind of forget that he does voice acting for Rocket. And then Vin Diesel is Groot.
Yeah, yeah. Weird cast in that movie, but a lovely one. The first movie I have for you this week is one that I highly recommend you check out. It's only 80 minutes, so this is a Thai movie. this is We're All Going to the World's Fair. I'm sure you've seen this like cover pop up on Max, where it's like a girl with painted face, kind of creepy looking, with like something held up in front of her eye. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
This is very, it brings you back to a specific time in your life, especially since you and I grew up in an age where we had access to smartphones and the internet in like elementary school, in middle school. And it's a very scary, not scary, but like an eerie watch. Like you're on the edge of your seat the entire time. And it is also a very solemn and pretty sad watch as well.
One that I should watch or no?
I think you would enjoy it. I'm not sure if you would relate to it or not. I can't be positive, but it's something that it captures a feeling that I had a lot, especially having older sisters who were more like in on the trends. Like even just my oldest sister having Farmville when I was in like third grade, and me wanting to be on the internet and like be a part of that community. That's kind of the feelings that are explored here.
Huh. I don't know. The first thing that comes to mind when you break down like the family dynamic side of it is Super 8. I don't know why that movie came to mind. Have you ever seen Super 8?
It's been a while, but yeah.
That was one I saw in theaters, and I remember growing up as a kid thinking it was a Spielberg movie, and then waiting 7 years to find out it was actually J.J. Abrams.
Oh, boy. We have J.J. Abrams conversations coming up here. But first, I want to talk The Strangers Pray at Night. Not a blast movie at all, but an enjoyable watch this time. The first time I saw this, I was just kind of meh on it. I'm a big fan of the first Strangers movie because it is a very grounded and horrifying portrayal of home invasion, especially by characters who are fairly realistic psychopaths, it feels, when you're watching. But this goes for a more over the top, I don't know, like it's full of neon lights and synth music, and like this, it's got heavy Carpenter influences, which is why I enjoyed it more the second time. But I don't think it succeeds as a sequel. I think it succeeds as a standalone film.
Twofold question. One, are you excited for the remake or additional sequel they're doing for The Strangers? And then two, as far as Home Invasion goes, do you like The Strangers more or Hush?
I knew that was coming. Absolutely Hush, but you know I'm a Mike Flanagan like lover. So Hush, no question for me. But yes, I am excited. The Strangers, I think it's like First Kill or something. It's a prequel. I don't want to spoil anything in The Strangers Prey at Night, but it kind of has to be a prequel with the way they leave things off there. Followed up The Strangers with The Crow, which is another non-Blast movie, but a B-plus Blast grade, because I had so much fun watching this. This is just a like goth rock and roll star coming back from the dead to enact revenge against the people who killed him. Like, just the most badass premise of all time. They're remaking this, which is why I watched it for the first time. And I don't think that this should be remade. It's pretty perfect for what it tries to do. And the performances are great. The action is awesome. The horror works really well. But I don't know if I need any more of it.
So I haven't seen this movie. All I know is that they're doing the remake with Skarsgård, and it always threw me off because the one thing I know about this movie is, didn't Brandon Lee, the lead, get killed on set?
I believe so, yeah. This is his last movie, and I'm pretty sure you're correct that he died on set, but he is astounding in this film. He is a great act, like probably top five horror performances of all time in this. There's a lot of emotion in a character that you wouldn't expect.
So good watch, just not a Blast movie, huh?
Yeah, just not really anything memorable. Definitely didn't learn or feel anything from it, but very, very cool in general.
You know, the way you're explaining it, like why it's not a Blast movie, but why it's cool, why it's fun, kind of reminds me of V for Vendetta. It's a movie that I've never considered a Blast movie or something special to me, but there are some badass scenes that you just cannot deny are great.
Very similar. Yeah, I know what you mean, and I feel the same way about that movie. But I followed that up with two J.J. Abrams masterpieces, Cloverfield and 10 Cloverfield Lane. Which of these do you prefer?
I prefer 10 Cloverfield Lane. With an asterisk.
I thought you would say that. I'm a big fan of the original, and I'm not sure I can choose between the two, which is pretty rare for me. Like, you know, I am always ranking everything, but Cloverfield, I think, is the greatest found footage film, like, of all time, with no question about it. And the way that the journey unfolds for those characters, I think, is fucking awesome. The only drawback for me is that Deadpool's friend gets a little bit annoying behind the camera.
Yeah, I can't believe it. You think this is the best found footage movie. I mean, you're not a Blair Witch Project guy, are you?
Not really. The kicking the map in the river ruins that movie for me.
Oh my gosh. I think that is, I mean, it's what kicked it off. And I also think you need to give the first Paranormal Activity its flowers. It kind of like transformed the found footage genre. I know that Blair Witch kicked it off, but Paranormal Activity was the one that people like really dialed in for. Cloverfield was, I think, like 4 years before its time. At least it felt like. This came out like 2011, 2012. I think it gets more buzz.
Huh. Maybe. Jack, go ahead.
Where does Chronicle rank? It's on the bottom of my list, but that's found footage too, right?
Chronicle is the apex predator, and it cannot be touched by any other found footage films.
Come on, give Dane DeHaan his flowers.
And I hate shitting on MBJ, but not for me.
That's when
I think that's the most realistic MBJ playing MBJ movie. I can imagine that's how he was in high school, no?
Had to be.
pre-roids from Creed. I think that was my first time seeing MBJ because I wasn't a Wire kid.
Hmm. I think my first was the Fahrenheit 451 movie or Fantastic Four.
Fantastic, definitely. I feel like Fahrenheit 451 came out late in the game, like post-Creed, because I remember that being a big deal. It was, it's MBJ and Michael Shannon in one of my favorite like books from school ever. How does this fail? And then it does exactly that. I think it like tanked.
Yeah, it was a bad one. But back on track, what sets Cloverfield apart for me, I think, is that it is a horror can be more thing. This is very clearly a 9/11 movie. And I think that the way it explores the shock of everybody in this attack and just the uncertainty of what to do and everything sets it apart from Blair Witch and Paranormal for me.
I like the take. I very curious to see what your 10 Cloverfield Lane take is, because these movies are drastically different.
They are, but they both subvert sci-fi genre expectations so well. And to wrap up, Cloverfield, not a blast movie, but an A rating for me. The 10 Cloverfield Lane is a blast movie for me, and it's because I have a very specific theater memory. I went to this at Kendall 11 with my buddy Josh and his parents, and Josh's mom is named Michelle. And I remember looking over at her when Jod Goodman is chasing Mary Elizabeth Winstead through the vents, yelling, "Michelle!" And she looked like she was going to piss her pants. Like, I think she wanted to leave the theater. It was awesome.
There are few theater memories that I have where I remember physically dropping my jaw. And I think one of them comes from 10 Cloverfield Lane when he forgives the guy and then shoots him point blank in the face.
It's a shock.
I did not see that one coming. And 15, 16 year old me, however old we were, was just like a 1,000 yard stare.
Oh. And honestly, that is a great moment in the movie, but not the biggest surprise. The biggest surprise for me in this movie is when she pops out of the bunker and she's like, "Oh my God, he was right." What? After everything that happens there, like, I just was like, he's got to have orchestrated this whole thing. It's all a play, whatever, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of the asterisk. I don't know if I'm loving the actual Cloverfield implementation of this movie. I think it worked better as a contained, like, psycho killer story. So I think if I revisit, I'm so torn. That kind of drove me crazy. I think that's where the fans were divided.
My issue is, I think that the Cloverfield tie-in works, but I think it lasts a little too long. Like, I don't know if I need to see her sucked up into the UFO and throw a Molotov in there. I think that it would be a very powerful, crazy ending if she just pops out of the bunker, she sees that there are aliens everywhere, and she's just like, "Fuck," and then cut to black.
Agreed.
I think that's great.
Agreed. I think that would have worked better. It became like a full-blown action set piece after she escapes from the bunker, and I wasn't a fan of that. Mm-hmm. And then it like ends in a way that I think would have worked, where she gets in the car and she starts driving and the lightning strikes and you can see all the alien spaceships. If it had ended something like that right when she got out of the bunker, I think that would have played.
Yeah. Cool. Very cool movie, though. Highly recommend for anybody out there who hasn't seen it. And then the last two watches of the week I want to fly through. I put on FNAF Ultimate Timeline on here by MatPat because this was just better than the FNAF movie. And interesting to see like what the actual story is behind these games. I have a fucking game theory that is, Scott Cawthorn actually had no idea what the story was going to be, and he was just like, "Let's just throw in a couple of Easter eggs and see if the fans like make one up by themselves."
And they did, 1,000,000%.
Yep, absolutely. But moving on, Normal People episodes 1-9. I won't talk through the show again, but I am showing it to Morgan right now, and that is why I'm watching it. We have watched 9 episodes in the last 24 hours. And as soon as we finish recording this pod, we're watching 10, 11, 12, which, as you know, is like the soul crushing part of this show.
Bro, watching this with your significant other is one of the most reckless, dangerous actions you could take. I don't know if I can abide by this behavior. You're putting her through hell. What? And you're doing it together. You got to go through the heartbreak of their relationship together.
Dude, it's been a journey. She's been like yelling at Connell and Marianne quite a bit. Like, why don't you just talk to each other? Yeah.
Hey, babe.
Why don't they?
Can we watch La La Land? I remember crying about this movie a couple years back. I'd like to revisit it with you and kind of share that pain if you're cool with it.
That is such a Steve take to be like, I really found comfort in 1210 Cloverfield Lane. The horror in it, just my trip to the theater, I'll never forget, and really comforting. What?
Yeah, it's Normal People is a lot scarier than 10 Cloverfield Lane, Jack. I'll tell you that much. this, she said, so we just finished episode 9, and she told me when we finished that it feels like her heart has been ripped out and just crushed and cut up into a million pieces. So can't wait for 10, 11, 12.
Hip, hip. I vividly remember it was like an exercise for me. I just decided, you know what? Why do I continue to delay the inevitable? Jack, for context, I could only watch one episode at a time and then take like a month break because the emotional turmoil was just too much for me. And then we got to the last 4 episodes or whatever it was, and I just started thugging it out, and it was the worst thing I could have done because it put me in the craziest pit I've ever been in. So thank you, Steve. Great rec. Really, that's a blast show right there. Thank you.
Hey, what is a blast show if not just soul-crushingly sad? That wraps up my watches for the week. I did want to give a quick shout out to Ace Ventura Pet Detective because it was playing while I was getting my tattoo today. But I'm not counting it as a weekly watch. For these comps, we have this broken down by region. And I think that we don't really have any theme here. We tried to do like a genre per region, and it just didn't work. We were getting Marquette as a comedy in the horror section, and it all just kind of messed up. So we're just flying through this, kind of freeballing it. So starting us off, we have in the East the number one seed UConn, and I compared this to Mission Impossible: Dead Reckoning Part 2. Yes, this movie is not out yet, but everything is lining up for it to be like the greatest MI movie of all time, one of the greatest theater experiences of all time. And that's pretty much how I feel about UConn. Everything's lining up for these guys to be in the Final Four. I know Ty's a big Aztecs guy, but I don't know if they can really stand a chance. And same with U of I and Iowa State. But I am hesitant to get my hopes up too high because I've been let down in the past so many times by these sequels. So UConn approaching with a kind of cautious optimism here.
Jack, we've been staring at this Dead Reckoning Part 2 comp all day as people are watching Big East ball all year. So I'll let you weigh in before I give my 2 cents.
Yeah, I'm really only here for basketball knowledge, which wouldn't make sense because if you looked at my bank account from this past weekend, it would say otherwise. But this was my least favorite comp out of the 16. I love you, Steve, but UConn is a wagon. Ty and I saw it in person at MSG at the Big East tournament. These guys have 15 different ways to win. And I just think that the what if of Dead Reckoning Part 2 not working out, I feel like these guys are as good of a bet as any to repeat and to just steamroll this tournament. So I digress.
So what we're saying, Steve, is that Jack's comp for UConn is the town.
That's where I was getting to. Perfection.
Great. Is Dan Hurley Ben Affleck then?
Steph Castle is Rebecca Hall. Couldn't tell you Cam why.
Cam Spencer is Jeremy Renner.
God.
Who's John Hamm?
No, I hope I hope John Hamm is Dan Hurley, man. I would love to see that guy fail. He just grinds my gears so much.
What? You're not a Hamm guy?
No, oh. I'm talking about Hurley.
Even
I want to see him fail in the end.
You don't like Coach Hurley? What's wrong with Coach Hurley?
None of my friends like Coach Hurley. We all think he's a twerp, man. This is a kid that like should have been bullied a little more in high school, maybe.
Ty, I'm with Steve on this one. I think we're in the minority of Hurley fans, especially coming from Marquette people. But not really like that guy.
You gotta respect him. I don't know. He's done a great job with that program. So you're a Shaka guy, but not a Hurley guy. Interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, you know, all we hear every time we go to a, you know, Big East game is that Shaka is the sixth man for Marquette. And every fan that isn't Marquette can't stand Shaka because he plays defense.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot too, but I don't know. I like the way he coaches. I like the way he develops this team.
We'll get to Marquette. Don't worry. I'm all in on that, so no worries. But you did mention my Aztecs, and I wasn't going to let anyone else give them a movie comp but me. As the one guy in America that put them in my Final Four last year, let's go Tex. And they're back to ruffle some feathers against the best college basketball team since 2019 Duke. And my God, I'm scared. I am scared for those Huskies, man. Those Tex. They know how to win. And my comp for them is the movie Upgrade, a sneaky good action movie that just does not get any recognition. And it just has awesome, gritty fight choreography. And it's not anything like transcendent or new. It's just very well crafted. And there's like a couple, you know, just good twists and nice surprises that come along with the story. And I feel like the Aztecs have been a 2-year surprise story. It might have one more good surprise for us this year. So that's my comp for my techs.
Here's my issue with that comp. And it's that Upgrade is exciting. in our three-man blast group chat, I asked if San Diego State was the Killers of the Flower Moon. Because it's the most boring thing you could ever choose to watch, but they're going to end up making a run and ultimately come home with nothing, just like Marty.
Yeah, well, look, I have fun with boredom, and I think that Upgrade it aligns more with, to your point though, in Upgrade, spoiler warning, if you haven't seen that movie, please check it out. It's a lot of fun. The good guy kind of loses, and I feel like the Aztecs, the good guys here, are set to lose by like 26 points to UConn tomorrow.
Yeah, I love
the God. What's the?
Go ahead, Steve.
Sorry, Jack. Take
no,
it away.
No, I was just gonna say I love the grit symmetry, but they're a 1,000,000% losing on Thursday. So sorry.
I was gonna ask if either of you know what the spread is, because
11
between Upgrade and Dead Reckoning 2, I think that spread's like -35.
So Steve, to give you some context, Jack, myself, and Jack's little brother all lost a tremendous amount of money on our book for first round of March Madness. But when you lose a lot of money, your offsite bookie will give you free play. So we all have north of $100 of free play to work with, and all three of us mega nuked UConn to cover the spread because they've been doing it for the last 2 years. I think every tournament game except for the Iona game they covered, and then this year they've just been dunking on everyone. I have no issues taking the 11 points.
Wow, betting against your tax, man. I hope that bites you.
I do too. Because then I can put a future in for the Tex to make it to the national championship again.
Oh, boy. All right, what's your U of I comp?
This one's one of my favorites, and it's Avatar Way of the Water. And for context, I love Avatar the Way of Water. And honestly, I love this U of I team. Taryn Shannon, bucket. Danger, bucket. But I can't stand Hawkins. And Avatar the Way of Water has a character Spider. He's like the one human boy character, and he's so unbearably annoying. Coleman Hawkins is that character, and that's why I can't get behind this team fully. There's always that one hiccup. So I'm anti Hawkins, and I'm anti.
Are you sure that character isn't just Marco?
We're getting there. We're getting there. So my other issue with Avatar: The Way of Water is that it's a little too long, and that was my other comp. So Coleman Hawkins, one of my pain points with the U of I. The other one is that our buddy Marco just glazes them all fucking year, sends the same danger memes all season just for them to get shafted in the first two rounds. So I would love to see them get knocked out, but I need to knock on wood because I don't want him preying on Marquette's downfall. So I'll leave it at that.
Oh boy. Next up, I've got Iowa State, and this is the last comp that we came up with. It took us a long time to figure out what we could say for this. And I decided to go with Twister, not only because they are the Cyclones, but because these guys are fast paced. They're fun to watch, but I don't really love them to make a run too far into this tournament. And I think that this is going to end up being a team that I'll forget watching a week after the tournament ends. Just like Twister, I forget that I saw like a month ago.
Quick side question. Are you excited for Twisters? Because I think it looks awesome. I'm in on Twisters.
Really? Isn't Daisy Edgar Jones in that?
Yeah. And Glenn Powell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then I'm in. Normal people actors makes me automatically in on any movie.
Normal people meets Top Gun Maverick. Sign me up.
Nice. Do you have anything to add here? Because Iowa State, I just have like no strong feelings about this year.
I'm sure producer Jack does.
I think it was perfect that it took this long. It took the longest to compare a movie to Iowa State. I think that perfectly encapsulates this Iowa State team. And what's funny is this year they have the talent to make a run, but no one cares. So I don't know if that has any Twister symmetry, but yeah, this team is boring.
Steve, maybe yeah. Iowa State is Killers of the Flower Moon. No one cares. Marty, it's over. Get it up. We don't want it.
Maybe, man. Spence, our buddy Spence, went to Iowa State, and he actually scheduled our Madden franchise's draft during the Iowa State U of I game tomorrow.
He does not care. He does not care one bit.
All right. Moving on to the West, we have UNC, which is, I think, my favorite comp of this tournament. And I'm saying that UNC is Halloween H2O 20 years later. Two seasons ago, these guys are an underdog pick. Halloween 5, Revenge of Michael Myers. Great movie that I don't think gets enough recognition. And they made a run 2 years ago. Last year, fell apart in a disappointing, frustrating way. That is Halloween 6, The Curse of Michael Myers, starring Paul Rudd. And now we're here at one of the best Halloween movies of all time, arguably the best to some people. I think Simmons has this as his number one. And we've got some legends returning to form. Armando Bacot and Davis are Jamie Lee and Josh Hartnett.
Look, we need to go on a side tangent because you're referencing this 2019 miracle run from UNC, and you're forgetting that the first round of that tournament, they dunked on my Marquette Golden Eagles and like 30 bombed us. I think Marquette's comp that year was Leave the World Behind because we had no business. We had no business being that bad in that game. It's so frustrating.
Yeah. I actually had Marquette that year to beat Baylor the next round. And when UNC did it, I was absolutely upset.
Yeah. That was a tough one for us.
Who is Caleb Love?
Producer Jack.
Who is Caleb Love?
I have a comp for this, and I want to save it for when we talk about Arizona.
Fair enough.
You know what? Let's just jump right into that. Let's just jump right into Zona. They're in the West. This is another team that took us a long time to put together a comp for, but I think it's Revenge of the Sith, and Steve, I know you're going to give me pushback, but just hear me out in my rationale, okay? Revenge of the Sith, arguably the best Star Wars movie, okay? There's a case for it. If not, it's at worst like top three in most people's lists, all right? But there's a lot of green screen. I wouldn't say there's the best dialogue in every moment. Hayden Christensen has a couple hiccups if you look at it from an objective lens. You know, if you're watching this movie on the wrong night when you're really turning it on, you know, they can fall. You know, maybe it falls on your list. Maybe they're not the greatest things in sliced bread. Maybe this isn't actually the greatest Star Wars. But on the right night, which is more often than not, this movie fucking bangs. This team bangs. So, Jack, to answer your question, I think Caleb Love might be Anakin Skywalker, the way he went to the dark side and left UNC.
This is perfect. I would even go as far to say Caleb Love is Hayden Christensen with all the flaws. And it's so weird with Caleb Love because there's one side of Caleb where I literally think he's the biggest heat check guy in all of college basketball. And then the other side, like on Sunday when I had money on Dayton and I was like, Caleb Love, please keep shooting the ball because you're a cancer to this team and tanking this run that you're on.
Yeah. Like, he's got his moments where he's duking it out with Obi-Wan on Mustafar and he's the greatest thing ever. And then he's just taking the worst pull-up jumpers and it's like Anakin, Attack of the Clones, bad dialogue.
All of my buddies have been laughing about Jack Golke, that guy from Oakland. It's just Caleb Love if he could actually make his shots.
Okay, Steve, thank you for bringing up Golke because all weekend I kept calling Golke Argyle with that haircut.
That's what Morgan said too.
It's
That's
the
awesome.
Same, it's the
I kept
haircut.
On calling him. I think he looks like Chandler from Friends.
Oh, come on. I think some people have been calling him Dan Aykroyd. I think that's another great comp.
Yeah, he's a very comparable guy. He's got a face that blends in.
And now he's going to be a LinkedIn superstar. Thank you, Jack Golke. Great run.
All right. I'm taking it back from you here and doing Arizona's matchup, which is Clemson. How the fuck did they make it this far? Nobody knows. And that's why Clemson is Five Nights at Freddy's. Everyone expected this to be a disappointment, and I think it is. The teams that have played them just can't make their shots for some reason. It's not even like their defense is that great. But maybe there's more to this than meets the eye. We'll have to see when they play Arizona. I have no belief in this team.
Either do I, and they've cost me a lot of money along the way. So these damn Tigers need to stop.
Arizona.
This guy had the Aggies.
Arizona's the perfect team to play Clemson, though, on Clemson side of things. Because if Arizona pulls a Hayden Christensen and has a shit night, just Clemson's going to roll through again, and we're going to see them in the Elite Eight and be like, how the hell did you guys get here?
But if we don't, and Arizona shows up, and God forbid UNC beats Bama, we're going to get the UNC-Arizona matchup, RJ Davis-Caleb Love. And I will say, if that matchup happens, the comp for that is Pearl Harbor. Not the actual event, Steve. Pearl Harbor, the movie. Have you ever seen it?
I have. It's horrible.
Okay, yeah, but like the pivotal plot point is that really bad love triangle between Affleck, Hartnett, and Beckinsale. It's literally the same like archetype of drama going on with those two teams.
Oh boy. I don't want to hear any more about Pearl Harbor. I want you to talk to me about Alabama.
So I was showing Jack the comps for all of these movies beforehand, and he said that this is his favorite. And I don't know if it's because he loves this movie or if I just hit it right on the money. But Alabama, give me Tenet. Don't try to understand this team. Just feel it. This team, if you watch it, is just structured chaos. These boys huck. They don't play a lick of defense, and they are going to shoot you out of the gym on a good day. And then you watch them against a team like James Madison.
Grand
and
Canyon.
It's like, oh, thank you. The other Grand James Canyon. Madison. And they damn near sell it. And who knows? They may show up against UNC and just drop another like 110 bomb. You don't know what to expect with these guys, but don't measure them against other objectively great teams that play the right way. Bama does it their own way, and you just have to accept it.
What I'm hearing from you is that Bama just plays AAU ball.
Correct. They run zero sets. It's all ISO ball, and it's just shocking that they're a collegiate basketball team, and they score 100 points a game. I don't get it.
God, do you remember a few years ago, Bama had so many people on their team foul out or get ejected that they were running the court with four?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Colin Sexton.
Roll Tide.
It's wild.
Colin Sexton.
Yeah, let's see that happen again on a Thursday or Friday. Moving on to the South, Houston. This is Ty's favorite comp. He says that this one gave him goosebumps in the Google Doc. And my comp is The Dark Knight Rises. This is a perfect sequel last season with the perfect cast of characters. Shed is going to become more in these next few rounds of the tourney, and this time the Houston Cougars are back for blood.
It genuinely terrifies me that this is the comp, because this Dark Knight Rises team may have to play Marquette in a later round. And my God, do I not want to run into Bruce Wayne / Batman after he rises from the pit? My dear, that's trouble.
The pit was the 45 free throws that Texas A&M shot.
What was the buzzer beater? Dude, when Batman gets his back broken?
Yes. And climbing out of the pit was Shed just yamming on them in OT. That game, I think, was the most frustrating watch experience of all time. All my buddies were rooting for A&M, and I was watching them blow jump balls when Houston fully had the ball. Like, the guy's hands aren't even on it anymore, and they're like, jump, let's give him a chance for another game winner. Oh, my God. I was losing my mind. And these guys are playing Duke, which... My comp for Duke is She's All That, because I wanted James Madison to win so badly that I had to insult them like this. Jared McCain is Addison Rae. The 2 days out of college TikTok was actually kind of hilarious for you to be posting that after you go like 8 for 11 from three. But it makes no sense to me how these guys have gotten this far. They are very flashy, but absolutely not the most skilled. And I think that will lead to an early exit for them in the Sweet 16.
So what you're telling me is you think Houston's going to beat the brakes off Duke?
Yeah, absolutely.
God, that terrifies me. I was talking to Jack this morning. We would love to play Duke. So fingers crossed. Fingers crossed.
Hey, you better worry about NC State and the big fella first.
That's a great segue. My comp for NC State is very simple. It's No Country for Old Men, because big man DJ Burns is Anton Chigurh. He cannot be stopped. He cannot be reasoned with. He cannot be bargained with. And his spin move cannot be stopped. I would say the like coin toss where he gives people a fair shot is when he doesn't run down the court to play defense and he just lets them play 4-on-5.
He is such a fascinating player to watch, man. Like, every time he gets the ball, you know he's not fucking passing it. You know his head's up at the rim, and that is the only place he's looking. And somehow he's making these circus shots. It makes no sense to me.
He is the craziest anomaly I've ever seen on a Division I basketball court. This is the guy you play on middle court in winter stays at, like, rec league, you know? I wouldn't want to bump into DJ Burns on like a Saturday, like at the rec.
I can't believe these guys are able to play any post defense on him. Like, if I was back there, I know he's giving me one bump and I'm just fucking in the third row of the stands.
Yeah, but if you got a lick of speed, you can blow by him at any point and just run him off the gym. Which leads me to my next comp. And producer Jack, as a fellow alum as well, I'd love for you to lean in and maybe help out here. But the Big Lebowski is my comp for the Marquette Golden Eagles. This is a team, a couple wins now, some gritty, great wins against Western Kentucky and Colorado, where the right players and this team are getting the recognition they deserve. Shaka's getting his flowers. People are happy for him. People now understand why Tyler Kolek was first-team All-American last year and second-team this year. People now know the name Cam Jones. Kid's a bucket. People get it. Oso is a great center. Just this crew is finally getting their flowers, but I feel like every round we're always the favorite upset pick. And this week, again, it's like, uh-oh, they've got to go up against DJ Burns. I think we're discrediting the Big Lebowski here. I think this is one of the better comedies that just doesn't get a fair shake when people are rattling off their top threes. I think Marquette is going to smack NC State this week. I'm ready. Run me through a brick wall.
Didn't Big Lebowski have a slow burn with recognition too? Like,
totally. It became like a cult classic.
First came out, yeah.
Yep.
That kind of feels like the national media. I mean, this is tough to say because Kolek was first team All-American last year, but I feel like the national media is finally truly understanding that Kolek, besides probably Shed, is the best point guard in the country and finally getting those flowers that you're talking about. I'm ready to run through a brick wall. We're beating NC State, we're covering, and then we're beating Houston. See you in Phoenix.
So is in this comp is Kolek the dude, and then is Shaka John Goodman with his PTSD to Nam being PTSD to Texas? Or
I think yes and yes, but I think Kolek is actually John Turturro's character, who is just a machine at bowling. I would say that Steve Buscemi's character is probably Ben Gold, or you know what? No, Steve Buscemi is David Joplin, because Steve Buscemi will hit a strike and everyone disregards him. Marquette fans are, David Joplin's driving us crazy. Anytime he puts the ball on the floor, he turns it over, but he'll like casually have like a 15 to 18 point game in the biggest tournament game and like a big moment. He always steps up, but we never seem to give the guy his flowers.
Steve, at MSG, I kid you not, UConn fans were turning to us at the final because we were all just screaming at Joplin to pass the ball. And they're like, what is wrong with you guys? Like, what's your deal with this guy? Like, you don't get it. This kid's got all the talent in the world, but the second he puts the ball on the floor, it's a disaster.
Pass it, Job. That used to be Stevie Mitchell for us, who I believe is going to become like a tournament favorite if we win. Like, just a gritty defender that last year was just so broke. I legitimately thought that I could have been Stevie Mitchell last year. But he has stepped up big time. And I don't think he has a proper comp from the Big Lebowski. I think he could be the dude, Jack.
And that was talking Marquette basketball with Jack and Ty.
Thanks, Attack.
Only comp I have for that man is, do you remember whenever Baylor crushed Gonzaga in the ship, that number zero guy on Baylor who was just like fucking everywhere?
Yes, torture chamber.
Absolutely. Moving on to the Midwest, who do you have as Purdue?
Give me Elf. Now, this is a chalk pick that I feel like when people talk about favorite Christmas movies, this one comes up, but movie nerds, like people that actually pay attention, can't, like, we don't want to root for Elf, and we definitely don't pick it as one of our favorites. And I feel like that's Purdue. It always has been. And it definitely is this year, where it's like, all right, we get it. You know, everyone likes them. They're a one seed, but what are we doing here? I don't trust these guys. This isn't one of the best. And I think this comp is perfect. I don't love Elf, and I don't love Purdue.
Agreed. I think that, well, I personally think Gonzaga is going to roll them the same way they rolled Kansas. Whoa. But what's the Gonzaga comp for that matchup to happen?
So for Gonzaga, obviously this team doesn't stack up to years prior, and that's been the narrative around this team. But all I've seen from them is just sound basketball, and we forget that Coach Few is an absolute machine. This team still has some guys. They just don't have, like, you know, the NBA prospects of years past. So give me Anchorman 2. Anchorman 2, great blast movie, by the way. That was a great theater watch. But it's obviously not going to live up to the hype of 1, but it absolutely does its job, and it definitely holds its own. It packs a punch. I would watch out for Gonzaga the rest of the way.
I love it. My Creighton comp, you rolled your eyes at before we started shooting here, and that's Annie Hall. This is undoubtedly a great movie, great team, but Woody Allen, or in this case Ryan Kalkbrenner, just makes me hate it, regardless of anything it does.
Dude, comparing a college basketball player to Woody Allen is crazy. Crazy.
I just can't describe how much that guy gets on my nerves, man. It's unreal.
The cough. Beware the cough.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I was trying to think of a kind comparison that I could make, but I was like, Ansel Elgort, like Kevin Spacey's way too far. I couldn't think of anybody besides Woody.
All right, I'll give you the pass. That's fine. We'll start shining some light on some college basketball players with this next comp, and that's Tennessee. Give me the natural. We got this kid from the middle of nowhere who's an absolute bucket in Dalton Connect. And it's kind of been the missing piece for this Tennessee team, where in years past, we've always known Tennessee as the team with a defensive presence. But now they've got this kid that can put some points on the board. And I think that Dalton Connect is the natural, or is Roy Hobbs, who catapulted that Knights team to a championship, to a World Series pennant. So I think that it's just perfect. Roy Hobbs came from the middle of nowhere. Where did this guy come from? He plays the outfield, but can also throw a 90-mile-per-hour fastball and hit 50 home runs. Who is this kid? I think it lines up pretty well.
I love the comp. Also an easy team to root for. I really wanted Texas to win that last matchup, but now I'm kind of rolling with Rick Barnes and his squad for the rest of the tourney.
Yeah, I wouldn't say no to Tennessee knocking off Creighton. That's not a team I want to face. So
awesome. All right. It is time for the bracket. And I think we're probably going to breeze through this because these matchups are just so, I don't know, mismatched, bad. You can tell what teams we like and what teams we don't. Starting off with Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning 2, UConn versus Upgrade, SDSU. Ty, give me your take.
Since Dead Reckoning Part 2 hasn't come out, give me Upgrade with an upset here. Love me some Aztecs. Give me Upgrade.
Can we
I'm fine with that.
Can we go majority rule here? And, you know, if it's 2-1, that's who we pick. Because
Upgrade
is a disgrace and a discount to this UConn squad.
Yeah, Jack, you're welcome to have a tie-breaking vote, but I'm also going Upgrade. Yeah. So
let's go Tex. Let's go Tex.
All right, next up we have Avatar 2, which is, remind me again, Ty.
That's U of I up against Twister, who's Iowa State.
Awesome. I am going to lead off here, and I actually think Twister might be a little bit better in a lot of ways. It's going to be a hard take to justify, so let me know if you're on the same page or not before I go down a rabbit hole.
Well, before you go down a rabbit hole, I just want to confirm, because last time we talked about Avatar The Way of Water, it was my understanding that you've never seen this movie.
In full. I have seen all the clips from it on the Fandango YouTube channel.
The movie theater experience and how just innovative it is, just from a 3D experience. This is, I never watched anything in 3D, And I would go see Avatar 3 in 3D because of how good Way of Water was. You got people to root for. You know, Sam Worthington's the lead. You know, I like this team. Yes, it has Coleman Hawkins. And I know we don't want to see Marco move on, but I can't believe we're leaning Twister here. Come on, brother. Come on.
Yeah. You talked me down. Well, I'm fine with Way of the Water going on. Bottom left, we have Halloween H2O, which is UNC versus Tenet, which is Alabama. I think H2O has this. I want to hear your take, but as great as Tenet is and as much as I love it, I don't think that every time I'm looking to rewatch a movie, I'm choosing H2O over it. I think that the actors are more at the height of their game in H2O. I can keep making arguments unless you stop me.
You're right on every front. H2O is just objectively the better movie. It's more fundamentally sound, but I come back to the theme of don't try to understand it. Bama has no reason to win this game, but they're going to hang around. And if there's a one seed that's vulnerable right now, I think it's UNC. I think it's H2O. Give me Tenet and an upset. We're going to need producer Jack
here. Wow.
You already know my answer. Tenet.
Yep.
Structured chaos.
Tenet it is.
Structured chaos. Roll Tide.
Can't wait for the FNAF Tenet Elite 8 matchup. Next up, we have Five Nights at Freddy's Clemson versus Revenge of the Sith Arizona. This is pretty cut and dry, is it not?
I have brought peace, freedom, justice, and an Elite 8 bid to my new empire. Give me Revenge of the Sith.
Great, great Caleb Love impression. That's spot on from the interviews I've heard.
Now you just have to pick
all right.
Three.
Top right. Dark Knight Rises, Houston, against She's All That, arguably the worst movie to come out in the last 5 years. Who you got, Ty?
Dark Knight Rises minus 26 and a half.
Oh, God. I pray that that's that they kill Duke this week, but I'm a little bit scared after the A&M rigging. No Country for Old Men versus The Big Lebowski. This is NC State against Marquette. I don't know if you know this. I am kind of a Big Lebowski hater. I don't... The humor just doesn't align with me, really. I watched this not too long ago with a lot of my friends, and we all kind of were sitting there, and we got into it at first, but around like the acid trip, I think we kind of lost interest, and I don't know.
This is why Marquette being the Big Lebowski is the perfect comp. We can do so much right. We can be such a great comedy, but no one fucking cares. We're always getting flack. But No Country for Old Men is maybe one of the greatest movies I've ever seen. Anton Chigurh is one of the greatest villains, and DJ Burns is one of the greatest anomalies in college basketball. So I'm hesitant to actually move Big Lebowski on. I have Marquette in my bracket, but No Country for Old Men is better than Big Lebowski.
Let's go. I'm excited we finally agree on one. I feel like on that left side, you kind of just overruled me a few times, so I'm glad to see some agreement here. Bottom right, we have Elf versus Anchorman 2. I think we both agree what the better Will Ferrell movie is here.
Ron Burgundy is moving on here.
Awesome.
And that would be not Gonzaga. Even really. Gonzaga's going to clear against Purdue.
Yeah, I agree. I think that Anchorman 2, just in general, I mean, you know my opinions on Elf. We've talked through them a number of times, and producer Jack picked them at the number one overall in our in our Christmas movies draft before his lighting up the draft board with the NBA Christmas Day slate. I don't think Elf holds a torch to Anchorman 2. But in the bottom right, we have two old movies, the only two old movies on here, Annie Hall and The Natural.
Well, I'm biased because The Natural is my dad's favorite movie, arguably his only blast movie. And this is my favorite baseball movie. I have more fun watching Dalton Connect than I do with Woody Allen and the cock. So give me The Natural.
I love it. I also do want to shout out one of my, I think one of my favorite comps did get taken out of this, and that is Tennessee as Like Mike. I don't know if you ever watched Lil Bow Wow play basketball in that movie. It is exactly like dribble for dribble Zakai Ziegler's play style. nothing more to add. Top left. We are in the Elite Eight now. We have Upgrade, which is San Diego State, versus Avatar 2, U of I. Talk me through your thoughts.
Oh, I like me a little more action than I do sci-fi here. And honestly, I think for what it is, I think Upgrade is a better action movie than Avatar 2 is a sci-fi movie. I think I have more fun with Upgrade. And I think it's not only subjectively, but objectively a better movie. And I think Upgrade knocks off Avatar 2, the big blockbuster that's supposed to win.
Yeah, man, I'm sold. Oh, my God. The lengths you'll go to take Let's SDSU to the Final Four is crazy. In the bottom left, we have Tenet, which is Alabama against Revenge of the Sith, which is, of course, Arizona. I'm going to take the lead here because these are two of my favorite movies, and they're both objectively not that amazing. I think that Revenge of the Sith doesn't make sense in a better way than Tenet doesn't make sense. I mean, we've got the blast movie aspects, and even though Tenet is one of my favorite theater experiences of all time, I will never forget the first time I watched Anakin kill those younglings, which in this case is Caleb Love just bricking lays. So I really think Revenge of the Sith has to move on here.
I can't argue with that. You know, Tenet, it's a hit or miss with me. I watch it and I have a great time, and then I watch it again and I say, what the hell just happened? I still don't understand. So it's okay. I'm aligned.
All right. Top right, we have Dark Knight Rises, Houston versus No Country for Old Men, NC State. Ty, talk me through it.
Dark Knight Rises is my favorite blast movie ever. It's my favorite Batman movie ever. As good as No Country for Old Men is, I would rather watch DKR any day of the week. So give me Dark Knight Rises. Give me Houston.
We'll have to post an Instagram story or something with an update on how this bracket does after the national championship, because if like you call an SDSU upgrade run to the ship, then I don't even know what to say, man.
Give me the text.
All right, last of the Elite Eight matchups, we have Anchorman 2, which is Gonzaga going against The Natural, Tennessee. These are two movies I suppose I don't have super strong opinions about. So, Ty, if you want to take the lead here, you're welcome to.
Yeah, this is kind of a tough one to unpack because I know I mentioned that Anchorman 1 is objectively better than Anchorman 2. Not in my book. I think Anchorman 2, I enjoy 2 more than 1. So there's a soft spot for Anchorman 2 already. But The Natural, as I mentioned, is, I think, the better movie. It's definitely the better blast movie for me. I have more fun. I have more memories. I think I have to lean The Natural here. As much as I love Anchorman 2, as much as I want to see it move on, as much as I want to see Gonzaga pull it off, I just think Tennessee's the better move. I think The Natural is a better movie.
Perfectly fine by me. And to give a quick overview of where we're at here for listeners, we're now in the Final Four. In the East, we have Upgrade, which is San Diego State. In the bottom left, we have Revenge of the Sith, Arizona. Top right, we've got Houston, Dark Knight Rises. And bottom right, we have The Natural, Tennessee. So our first matchup here feels like a no contest between Upgrade and Revenge of the Sith.
Well, not so fast, Steve. How bad do you like Star Wars? Hopefully not as much as you like action movies. Because Upgrade. I can't make a case anymore. Revenge of the Sith is just as fun. Give me Zona. Sorry, Upgrade.
Oh God, Jack has to just be dying inside listening to our methodology here. Especially after.
If there was a tiebreaker for this Final Four matchup, I think I would have to go Upgrade just solely on the fact that if the Aztecs beat UConn, they're making the national championship.
Don't.
Hey man, UConn caught him on a good day.
Poor UConn. Poor Dead Reckoning Part 2. Upgrade's going to stop it from getting released.
Oh. Wow. Tom Cruise is going to get an upgrade. He's going to live that life. Okay, on the other side, we have another pretty much no contest, in my opinion. Dark Knight Rises against The Natural. This is pretty much your favorite movie versus your dad's. I mean, is there any argument for The Natural?
Sorry, Pops. We're moving Batman on.
All right. Brings us to our national championship, Revenge of the Sith, Arizona, against Dark Knight Rises, Houston. I mean, Ty, talk me through it, because this is probably the closest matchup we've had so far.
Oh my gosh, I forget how much you love Revenge of the Sith. Oh boy. I would say that both movies are A+, A blast movie material, but from an objective movie lens, I think that The Dark Knight Rises clears. I think I can find a lot more flaws in Revenge of the Sith, although it may be slightly more fun. I think I have more memories, I've learned more lessons, and just have an overall 360-degree view better movie with Dark Knight Rises.
So does that make Caleb Love one of the cops trapped in the sewer?
Well, look, Caleb Love is Anakin Skywalker right now. I think that the Dark Knight Rises might be the lava pit at Mustafar. I think it's Obi-Wan.
Wow. That's kind of a crazy take. I hate to be a contrarian here, but I might have to send this to a tiebreak. I think Dark Knight Rises, as good as it is and as much as we both love it, I don't know if...
Jack's going to say, give me Upgrade. Forfeit. Upgrade gets to play in the matchup.
Yeah, Jack, what's your take?
Caleb Love and Revenge of the Sith kills Jamal Shedd and Batman in Dark Knight Rises. So Upgrade has to come in and become the Blast National Championship. Upgrade!
Okay, Ty, I guess we just have to figure this out by ourselves then.
Jack heard you put it to a tiebreaker. He was like, oh, shit. Not me. Oh no! What really funny thing can I say? Now, Jack, seriously, I think Steve and I are making our cases from a movie lens, and that's why you're here. As you know, an expert in ball knowledge, who's the better team here, Zona or Houston?
Okay, I think at their peak, Zona's the better basketball team on their best day. Houston has trouble scoring. Houston does, though. Have the best defense in the country. I'm going to lean Houston and Dark Knight Rises only because I can trust that defense more than I can trust my favorite player, Caleb Love, showing up consistently. Dark Knight Rises, congrats.
Jack, have you seen Star Wars?
No.
Yay!
All right, Dark Knight Rises is the Blast National Champion, also known as Houston. We will be posting on Instagram or something, updating you on how this bracket goes. I'm sure SDSU isn't going to let us down, though.
Let's go, Tex. Plus 11. Nah, screw plus 11. Upgrade money line. Tex money line. Book it.
I can't wait to text people this weekend when SDSU wins and just write in all caps, upgrade.
Oh, God. That's awesome. I want to hammer their money line.
Ty, that's how you make back the money you lost last weekend, man.
Yeah. Yep.
Blast V2? Nah. SDSU. all right. Thank you all for listening to this episode of the Blast Podcast. We love this concept and we are so excited we could bring it back to everyone for another year. Be sure to check out our website at blastmovies.net for our latest content and news, as well as our Instagram and TikTok at blast_movies_ and blast.movies respectively. We will catch you next week with another episode.
Keep shooting, Caleb Love.